The information discussed on this show is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All content is for general informational purposes only.
It's Guy's Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guy's Guy's Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins, Guys Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. And once again, this week is no exception. Today, we're going to talk about social drinking, an apropos topic for the holidays here, and it's all about alcohol. And you know, alcohol doesn't discriminate, but it does trick many people into believing that they're the only ones who are kind of wrestling with their use of alcohol. My special guest today is Hadley Sorensen, and her story is the story of a social drinker, fully immersed in our society's rampant drinking culture, which we can all relate to. She woke up and realized that life didn't need to revolve around alcohol. This is the story of a mom who quit drinking before things got out of hand. And so many of us, we go home and we have that drink right after work or have a glass of wine and maybe another one, and we chit-chat and with our friends or whatever, or go out and meet our buddies after work and catch a game and have a couple of beers or talk about what happened this day, or the world of sports or whatever, but all of us have the kind of alcohol culture, the drinking culture is ingrained in us. Now, my guest, Hadley, she asked herself, did she have a problem? Because she didn't want to feel ashamed of herself after drinking, but she had some bouts with some blackouts and forgetting certain things along the way, and it was a challenge for her, and it's a challenge for a lot of other people. And Hadley, like so many others out there, wanted to wake up each day to a life that was exactly how she left it the night before. She didn't want to have any surprises when she went out or was at home even drinking. She wanted to feel good. And now Hadley hopes to help other women and men realize that they can do the same. They can kind of wrap their arms around alcohol usage and misuse. And you know, I quit drinking 4 years ago. I had an appendicitis attack. I didn't realize it was an appendicitis attack, and it was so ridiculously painful that my life force started to leave my body. I was in such pain, agony, and I kind of pulled it back in, and then a voice came in my head and said, "Don't drink alcohol," and I stopped. That was 4 years ago, and when you hear a voice in your head say something so specific, I figured it's got to mean business, because I was in severe discomfort. And I quit. And I know it's not easy for a lot of people, and it wasn't that easy for me, and I didn't have an issue with alcohol. I just enjoyed it, and I worked in the business for many years also. But it can be done. You can take it out of your life, and you can find out so much about yourself and about the ritual of drinking and how it underpins so much of our activities and markers in our culture that it's really fascinating. So I think you're really going to enjoy my conversation with Hadley Sorensen. The book she put together is called The Dirty Truth on Social Drinking, Everything in Moderation and Other BS, and I think you're really going to relate and enjoy our discussion today on Guys Guys Radio.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, Guys Guys Radio, it is the interview portion of our show. My special guest is Hadley Sorensen. We're going to talk about Hadley's experience with alcohol, and the book she wrote is a real heads-up book for everybody out there. It's called The Dirty Truth on Social Drinking, Everything in Moderation and Other BS, and it's all about Hadley's journey from being a fitness enthusiast, a working woman, a mother, and social being out there, and determining at a certain point that maybe the glasses of white wine at the end of the day and day after day after day after day on top of, you know, the initial drinking from when she was 14 to the college binge drinking, et cetera, like a lot of us go through, was too much. So she stopped, and she's here on Guys, Guys Radio to tell us all about her journey. Welcome to the show, Hadley Sorensen.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here and get to have this conversation.
So let's start at the beginning. For the curious out there, many people have kind of mirrored your lifestyle where took care of themselves, successful family, but always had that those markers of alcohol to celebrate every occasion. And that occasion could be the end of 5 p.m. And then at a certain point, you realized this is not working for me. Tell us a little bit about how you started drinking, what you drank, how you felt about that. When you moved into college, what happened? When you moved into the workforce, what happened? And what was the epiphany that came to you that said, this isn't work for me anymore?
Yeah, sure. I'll try and give you the brief version here. So the very first time I got drunk, I was 14, which seems to be a common age now that I've started talking about this. It terrifies me because I have a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old. But it was that sort of high school drinking where we would find a field and somebody would get their hands on alcohol and, you know, everyone would sort of drink until they threw up in a field somewhere or at somebody's house when the parents weren't home. But it was sporadic, right? It wasn't every weekend. It was sort of whenever we could get our hands on things. And as an introvert who kind of struggled to fit in as a teenager, normal teenage stuff, I thought, well, this is great. It lets me be more outgoing. I can be the life of the party. I really felt like it was giving me a leg up. And that continued into college. I went to a big school, big drinking scene, and my drinking followed normal social conventions for the situation, right? I was drinking just like everyone around me, but I had never felt quite right about it. I always sort of felt like there was something off with my drinking, and I couldn't articulate what the problem was. Part of it was that I tended to black out when I drank a lot, and that led to a lot of shame. I had a lot of shame, a lot of regret, a lot of kind of messy emotions tied to those blackouts. You know, if you've ever woken up the next morning and tried to piece together clues to figure out how your night ended or how you got home or what did you say, who's mad at me, what did I, you know, did I embarrass myself, that kind of thing. And so that continued into adulthood. I left college, you know, had kids, was working in the corporate world, and all those same people were still pretty much drinking the same way, except we had sort of put an adult spin on it. We were drinking expensive wine, you know, around the fire pit while the baby monitors were on, or we were going to nice restaurants. But like you mentioned, our whole world sort of seemed to revolve around drinking. It was how we celebrated, how we handled stress. It's, you know, how we decompress at the end of a day or deal with the kids when we're overwhelmed. It's just sort of how we address every range of human emotions. Drinking is the answer. And I was feeling worse and worse about that as the years went on. That shame was kind of accumulating. I was really starting to notice the effect that it had on my mental health. I was starting to be able to really see the connection between, you know, being depression and those drinking episodes. And it was all kind of building up. Through COVID, especially, things sort of escalated. And in August of 2021, I woke up one morning with the spins and the chills. And as we do, you know, 3 a.m. after sharing a bottle of rosé with a friend. And I just decided, I'm sick and tired of feeling like this and acting like I'm powerless in the situation. I'm done. I'm done feeling this way. And so I decided that was going to be my last hangover. And it was. I haven't looked back. And it has been an incredible journey from there to where I am now. I never would have believed you if you had told me, you know, 4 years ago that I'd be sitting here talking about my sobriety book on podcasts and YouTube videos.
Fantastic. That's so fantastic. So for me, it's been 4 years, and I want to get some context from you as to when you first stopped, Were you concerned, like what your friends would say, and like the first time you went out to a bar or restaurant, like what would you like to drink? And everybody's ordering something, and you're like club soda or whatever. How did you handle that? Because sometimes that's the toughest part, just to get into the new kind of behavior.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that's where a lot of people get hung up because the idea of it feels really scary. And it's definitely something I was concerned about. And I thought, I'm kind of the party girl. I'm the one that always kind of gets things going, which is bizarre because I'm a total introvert. Total introvert. But I used alcohol to help me be what I thought I needed to be. I don't really enjoy going to bars and clubs and but I just used alcohol to get through it. So I worried about that. And it was interesting because honestly, no one in my life, including my husband, had any idea that I was struggling with this. No one knew. I kept it very private and it wasn't obvious because I didn't look like someone with a problem. I looked like I was drinking just like all of my friends, like everyone around me. So for me to suddenly raise my hand and say, "Something about this isn't quite right. I have a problem." I thought, are they going to think I'm saying they have a problem too because we drink the same way? But I finally just decided that none of that matters. It doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't matter. We've sort of been conditioned to think there's only two categories of people. Either you're an alcoholic or you're normal, and you only fit into one of those two buckets. And it's so silly because alcohol use disorder really occurs on a spectrum. And there's so many different, places you can fall on that spectrum. So to answer your question, I sort of started by telling people that I was doing 75 hard, which is the sort of wellness challenge, right? Where you like follow a nutrition plan, you exercise twice a day, you don't drink, you drink a gallon of water, you do all this like checklist of things. And most of that was stuff that I already did because I was a marathon runner and a fitness enthusiast. And really, for me, it was just like it gave me an alibi for not drinking. It gave me something to tell people. And I needed that at first. So I loved checking that daily box for no drinking. And as that 75 days went on, so I would tell people, I would go out or we had friends to our lake house and I'd say, "Oh, sorry, just so you know, I'm not drinking because I'm doing the 75 hard challenge."
Smart. I like that.
And it gave me some time to like wrap my arms around what I was doing and figure out how to talk about it and what I wanted to share. And really soon into that 75 days, I started saying to my husband and people close to me, "I think this is it. Like, I really think I'm done." And I don't think anyone believed me at first, but I started talking about it more and more and kind of finding my voice and being more comfortable sharing and being more comfortable going places and not drinking. And they caught on.
Let me ask you this, Hadley, and Hadley Sorensen, our special guest. Here's the book, The Dirty Truth on Social Drinking, for our YouTube and Rumble audience. How did your friends take it when I love your stealth method of like, I'm doing the 75 hard to get you out of that. So you kind of pushed that discussion aside. That was very smart. But how did they take it when they realized that you're not drinking anymore? Did anybody ever say, hey, what's going on with you? And were they supportive, or were they like, oh, I just drink in moderation? And so then they got into all about themselves, because that's kind of what I heard from people, where I
Yeah.
told them what I was doing and they immediately got defensive about themselves, like, well, I only drink moderately and blah, blah, blah. But nobody was quitting. I wasn't asking anybody to quit. I wasn't putting down alcohol. I had a lot of fun with it, but it was just time for me to lay the cocktail glass, the tumbler down, if you will.
Yeah, no, and I very much relate to that. And I feel like I sort of experienced a range of reactions. Most of the people close to me in my life who love me and care about seeing me, happy and thriving and successful, they supported me. Like I said, they were surprised at first. And a few of them said after the fact, they had this initial reaction of, "Oh, that kind of sucks because normally we have so much fun or we do this," or, and my husband going, "Oh, we live in a Virginia wine country outside of DC. We go to wineries for everything." And it was like, "Oh, bummer, really?" But then I think they started to notice all of the positive changes and how happy I was and how good I felt about it. And it's kind of hard to argue with that with someone you love. If they make a change that has a positive impact on their lives, it's hard to say, "Oh, but I really wanted you to get drunk with me on Friday." So I found that almost everyone was supportive. People who I was not that close to would have some of those reactions like, "Oh, well, I only drink really moderately," or they turn it around, because I find that, in those situations, it's like we're holding up a mirror and they're seeing kind of their own issues, and they get very defensive. But I always try to make it very clear that my choice was not because I am anti-alcohol. My choice was about me and no one else. It was what I needed to do for me. I did have a few friendships that sort of shifted, but I think it's probably because it was time for those friendships to shift anyways. They were relationships that were really, there wasn't maybe much in common other than being drinking buddies. And I was sort of okay, like blessing and releasing, right? But for the most part, people's reaction was positive, and I've felt good about it.
How about your husband? Was he your drinking buddy? And how did what did he and you say he didn't really know that you felt you had an issue. How did he how did he process all of this?
When I started talking about it more openly with him, he at first, I think he felt sort of like upset, like, "I can't believe I didn't know you were struggling with this. Like, why didn't you share this with me?" And it was like, that's just part of the shame that goes along with this. I didn't want anybody to know, because if I talked about it, it made it real. I am fortunate in that my husband is one of those, in the book I refer to him as like a moderation unicorn. He's that definition of someone who can have a drink now and then, take it or leave it, doesn't think about it, doesn't, just. It's a no-brainer for him, and moderation was never a no-brainer for me. So it's not like he's a big drinker. A lot of the things we did revolve around it, though, going out for drinks, for a date night, going to a winery to celebrate something. So those sort of routines were deeply embedded in our relationship. But it's been relatively, smooth working through that. You can still do some of those same things, and we do. It's just that I'm not drinking wine anymore. I'm drinking club soda or a mocktail, and I find that I actually have more fun than I used to.
Yeah, that's a great point, Hadley. I discovered after about a year, and the first year was the toughest because I had to go, summertime. I like margaritas. I like tequila. I worked in the industry. I can't have that. There's no substitutions. But then I realized over time, about a year or two into it, that I tried a non-alcoholic beer. And I realized two things. One, they weren't that bad. It was like, the first time you have Diet Coke when you're a Coca-Cola drinker. At first, it's like, what? And then it becomes your Coca-Cola. With the non-alcoholic beers, all the companies make them now, and they're pretty good. And I would go out with my friends to watch a ball game or something. We'd be drinking beer for like 3 hours straight. Now, if I have a non-alcoholic beer, I have one, and maybe I finish it. For some reason, I just don't like it. But what it does for me, and I want to get your take on this. Forgive me for the long setup, but I found it was the ritual that I was missing. It wasn't the alcohol. And as long as I could pop open a beer and pour it, that was very comforting. And it's still comforting to me because I don't feel left out and I can have something that has no alcohol in it. So I'm just released the alcohol, but not all the rituals that are so ingrained in us throughout our Western culture. What do you think of that?
Oh, I totally agree. And I had a really similar experience. For me, my sort of big trigger was, we were talking about this earlier, it was like 5 p.m. every day. Through 2020 and 2021. Now, I was still only having one glass of wine a day most days. But it was 5 o'clock. It was that sort of trigger. And it was like, "Oh, it's time for my glass of wine and I can unwind and all of that." Well, when I quit, I found that at 5 o'clock every day, I was getting kind of twitchy. And it wasn't like a physical dependence. It was that ritual, that routine. And so I fell in love with, I didn't try any of the amazing non-alcoholic drinks out there for a while because I was worried that that would be sort of triggering. But I fell in love with kombucha, or I would make some kind of sparkling water or ginger beer drink. And I would make something at 5 o'clock, and I would go sit in our sunroom with my book, and I would sip my drink and read my book for a few minutes before I started dinner and sort of the afternoon craziness. And it was, that was all I needed. It was just that routine. And even things like you mentioned, only having one non-alcoholic beer. Just last week on Thanksgiving, we were with family at my parents' house, and I treated myself. I bought a bottle. It's not a big drinking crowd, but everybody's having some wine and champagne, and I got myself a bottle of non-alcoholic champagne that I had never tried before. I kept hearing about the this brand, and I brought it, and I opened it, and I had a glass, and it was incredible. I was blown away by how good it was, and I had a glass and a half the whole night, and then I brought the bottle home with me, and I eked it out and finished it over the next couple of days. I had a little glass each night. That never would have happened in my drinking days on a holiday like that. I would have had a whole bottle probably. But it was just a little something to, you know, I had in my champagne glass, and it was tasty, and it's just, you know, that ritual.
I hope we're not talking out of school for people who have a real issue, because I found that it's just satisfied the ritual with me. And I only have like 3/4 of a glass of non-alcoholic beer, like once every 2 weeks, maybe. Before, I was going out with my friends. We were drinking, we're pounding. When, you know, you meet people after work, you meet at a bar and you drink in New York, you meet your friends after work, you're watching a game, you're drinking one the whole time. So it's a lot different. I don't, maybe it's not perfect in terms of what the experts would say about how do you stop consuming alcohol, but it's worked for me, and it sounds like it's worked for you, and it's not so tough on us, because at least we can replace the rituals. And that's what people do. Our behavior is we fall into certain patterns, and when something's taken away, we need something to fill that in. It's like, that's how you do hypnosis. You eliminate one thing and you replace it with something better. I can say that because I'm a hypnotist, but that's how it is. So you were working out a lot before you stopped drinking. So you were a marathon runner like I was. I was drinking like crazy, and I ran 3 marathons in my 40s. I don't know how I did it looking back, but I would never consider doing that now. How did you find drinking and then working out and then not drinking and then working out? Did you find a real difference?
Yeah, you know, my 44-year-old body looks back on some of the things my 35 to 40-year-old body did. And I'm like, that would not fly now. And I do like to say that I think, you know, when we're younger, we can get away with doing some things that we can't once we hit a certain point. And I think that was very much in play. I was a fitness coach. I was a marathon runner. I was lifting weights, running a lot of miles, and I was still drinking a lot. And I could do things, drink a bottle of wine on Friday night and still get up for my long run on Saturday. I might not feel very good. I was probably dehydrated. I was probably brutalizing my body. But, you know, as an endurance athlete, we sort of have this mindset, like, I can push through anything, because that's what running a marathon is all about.
Exactly.
So it's like, I can push through this 10 miler after a bottle of wine. I mean, I have to get it done. That's just what we do. But I wasn't doing myself any favors. And I had this attitude that's so common. You hear, you know, alcohol has become really disgustingly embedded within the fitness and wellness community. And it's this bizarre phenomenon. Like, I'm so healthy, I do all this exercise, I'm drinking kale smoothies, like that's somehow canceling out the poison we're drinking, right? That's not how it works. You know, a bunch of kale isn't going to cancel out a bottle of wine. So I frequently didn't feel great. And I was run down, and my performance wasn't improving. And it was one of the benefits I noticed almost immediately when I quit drinking. I was in the midst of training for a half marathon and then a marathon pretty quickly after. And I noticed a huge improvement in my training and just how I felt when I was running because I was getting better sleep. My body was recovering better. I was fueling myself better. And I was, you know, I was flushing out all of the alcohol. It was like my body was going, oh my God, thank you. So yeah, I noticed a big difference, and I can't imagine doing that to myself now. I mean, I don't think I could do it if I tried.
Okay. You mentioned something in the book. It's interesting. The AUD, alcohol use disorder. What is that? And how'd you come up with it? And what's so important about it?
So that's a great question. So I did not come up with it. Alcohol use disorder, this is a big misconception in the world of alcohol and the addiction space. The term alcoholic is more colloquial. It's not an official diagnosis. The actual diagnosis for what we think of as alcoholism is alcohol use disorder, right? And so that's the official term. Even though few people know that, and it is helpful because it recognizes that alcohol use disorder occurs on a spectrum, like I mentioned, ranging from mild to severe. And so it discounts this idea that you're either sort of one or the other. It's not binary. You're not either an alcoholic or you're normal. You can fall anywhere in there. And that's where this term gray area drinking has sort of been coined to reflect people that fall somewhere in that middle space. They're not physically addicted. They're not dependent. They're not suffering the range of sort of external consequences that we think of stereotypically, but they're not that good either, you know? And that's absolutely where I fell. So it's great that that is becoming more widely known, because it gives a voice to people who used to, you know, Google, am I an alcoholic, and go through that checklist and say, oh, I'm not, so I must be fine. I guess I shouldn't do anything about it. But now we're starting to acknowledge that it doesn't matter how many items you check on a checklist. If something about your drinking doesn't feel right to you, you can quit for any reason, anytime.
My special guest on Guys Guys Radio is Hadley Sorensen, author and influencer. And we're talking about her book, The Dirty Truth on Social Drinking. Now, you mentioned here everything in moderation and other BS. Just tell us about your perspective now about can you be, because based on just what you were talking about, moderation with drinking. Is it possible?
Well, so first, let me start by saying there is no perfect objective definition of what constitutes moderation with alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. It's an addictive drug. So it's really a bizarre concept when you think about it. We toss that term around a lot. Do I think it's possible? Yes, even though there's no perfect definition. Like, I use my husband as an example. He mm-hmm. is a moderate drinker. What I think is BS is this idea we have that everyone should be able to moderate, and if they can't, there's something wrong with them. Again, we're talking about a substance that is one of the most addictive drugs. When you look at the scale that shows the addictive properties of, I mean, it's in the top three. You know, we're talking with heroin and cocaine. No one would say, you can't just do heroin moderately. I mean, why can't you just moderate, right? That's absurd. We don't do that with cigarettes. We don't do that with anything else. But there's this idea that we should be able to moderate our drinking. And it's just not possible for lots of people. And that is not a sign of weakness. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with them. It's alcohol literally doing its job.
Do you think part of it is physiologically, people, how they react to alcohol in their bodies is different person to person from the
research
you've
done? I do think that's the case. And there's a lot of science that has looked into that and how much of it is, you know, genetic versus not. And, you know, I don't know enough of the details to speak to that. But I do think it differs from person to person. I mean, I look at just the difference between my husband and I. It's an easy example because I live it and see it, and moderation was just not something that worked for me. I mean, I would go into every drinking night saying, "Oh, I'm just going to have one tonight." And this, he can just have one and not even think about it. He can go out to dinner, have a drink, and leave it half full and walk away at the end of the night. It just seems to work differently for people.
Did you find that that's part of it is a personality thing? For instance, a lot of times people who are recovering from drinking, they become marathon runners, or they eat a lot of chocolate, or there's a substitution thing. Do you think that's a part of a personality that gets so into something that that's what makes a difference? One of the factors between a moderate, quote unquote, moderate drinker who processes and just keeps going fine versus somebody who kind of gets pulled in a little bit into the deep end a little bit more than they like.
Yeah, you hear a lot of people, and I'm this way, say, "Oh, I'm just kind of an all or nothing person." And that's sort of a common theme. You hear addictive personality thrown around, and there's not really much science behind that. That's more, but again, I think you're right. I am someone, my mom always laughs when I have this conversation. I can't moderate anything, right? I can't moderate M&Ms. I can't moderate, how much shampoo I use. I use too much of everything. It's just kind of like a family joke. How would I be able to moderate an addictive substance and think that that was going to work? So I definitely think there's a personality component.
Let's take that to because I think that's a great point. Because in your book, you have a lot of questions for like you're very circumspect and self-aware. For a lot of people, they're not sure, they don't think the same way. You put a whole bunch of questions that people need to ask themselves in terms of if they've had any questions about maybe am I drinking too much or am I just have to do it every day and why is that? But you have a lot of questions that I think are very wise in terms that people can ask themselves to get a tab on where they are in terms of the spectrum of being what type of drinker.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I think we've kind of been trained to think the questions you ask yourself are, am I an alcoholic or do I have a problem? And what you talk about from the book, I basically say those are the wrong questions to be asking. It doesn't matter if you're an alcoholic. It doesn't matter what your problem looks like. The questions we need to be asking are, how does my drinking make me feel? How do I feel when I wake up the next day? Am I proud of myself? Do I feel good about it? How would I feel if I was still drinking the same way 10 years from now? Am I fine with that? Or do I think, oh gosh, still that's still going on? I mean, it's this looking inward to say, okay, do I think that my drinking is having a negative impact on my life? Do I feel good about it? Doesn't matter how you define my problem or if I need a label, or we don't need any of that. All that matters is how it feels to you. And if something feels off, I encourage you to get curious and explore that.
Now, you also mentioned something I think we all went through together, which was the pandemic, and that how, we passed the refrigerator 25 times more a day than usual. And a lot of people put on that those extra 15 pounds or so and developed different types of behavioral challenges. Do you think your home, and you mentioned it in the book, that some of your time at home seemed to fuel a little bit of that desire for that 5 p.m. to get there a little quicker?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that was the case for so many people. In 2020, that was really the first time when I talked about my sort of 5 p.m. habit. That was really when it became consistent for me. Up until that point, it was I might have a glass of wine every now and then throughout the week, but it was really only the weekends that I was drinking. But 5 p.m. became consistent, and it was a crazy year for everyone, but I talk about in the book, we had sort of a series of events kind of hit our family, a death in the family. And then my husband was diagnosed with cancer and was then laid off a week before he started treatment. And then it was just all these things that kept hitting. And it was like, clearly I need a drink at 5 o'clock every day. I deserve it mentality, because that's how I'm going to handle this stress. Like, life is so crazy. But I've got my 5 o'clock wine, and it wasn't really helping anything. In fact, it was making things worse. But it definitely escalated things, and I know that was a very common experience during that year.
Now, you said like it was an August morning, you woke up, you had a hangover and a little bit dry mouth and all of that stuff, and you said, that's it. Did you, was that it? Was that it? That was the inciting incident, if you will, or did you have some fits and starts where I'm going to quit, or had you ever quit in the past, like, dry January and all of that stuff? What was your experience in terms of, did you just put the marker down if you're an all or nothing type of person that you seem to say you are, that you can do it because you have a lot of, there's a lot of strength that comes with that, because when they're in, and when they're out, and that takes some fortitude.
That's a really good question, because I don't want people to think that it was this easy sort of, oh, I just woke up and decided I was going to quit, and then I was done with it and just moved on. I mean, it was a hard decision, and it was a hard process for a while, but it was sort of a combination of those two things, if that's possible. I had quit lots of times over the years. I had taken breaks. I had done Dry January. I had woken up after a really bad hangover and said, I'm never drinking again. But the difference was, those times, I never really meant I'm never drinking again. I would take a month off, or even more, or a week off, or I would make all these rules. I'm going to be so moderate now. I'm just not going to let that happen again. So there were lots of fits and starts, but I would say 2019, a surprise party for my husband that resulted in the worst hangover I'd ever had, was really kind of the, while I didn't quit totally that day, that was kind of what got me started down this path. It was the event I can look back on and say, okay, that was when it started. I woke up knowing that. It's the first time I really made the connection between that drinking episode and my mental health. And I felt really crappy for a really long time. I took a break. I was moving in the right direction. And then there were a few other events. And so that morning in August 2021, when I woke up, it was like the last straw. And I did draw that line and say, okay, this is it. And that's where my all or nothing personality kicked in. And for me, it was this wake up, like, you know what? It is so much easier to not drink at all than it is to continue battling this back and forth and trying to figure all of this out. It's so much easier just to say, nope, I don't drink, and I don't have to make any decisions around it. It's like it freed up all of this brain space.
That's a great point, and that's something that everybody should be aware of. So, for our audience out there, who a lot of them are probably thinking right now, I wonder if am I drinking every day? Maybe I do have that glass of wine every day. Maybe I do get together with the girls and we chop it up and have some wine every night. What's your advice to them if you want to start the process of going inside, asking themselves what's going on, and then how do you proceed if you say, you know what? I think on the checklist, I'm a little bit over the mark. I need to take care of this. Give us the whole process.
So the first thing I love to tell people to do, and again, there's no right or wrong answers here, and there's no
For you, that
right,
work for you, right?
there's no right or wrong way to quit drinking or to get sober. I always want to make that really clear. But what I suggest is, if you're wondering and you're starting to kind of question your relationship with alcohol, educate yourself a little bit. And what I mean by that is, find a quit lit book, right? Which is this whole genre we talk about of these alcohol books, whether it's my book that you're sharing or another. There's so many others, and I share a list of my favorites on my website. I can tell you about later. But the books can be really eye-opening, and hearing through other people's experience, but also learning more about the science behind alcohol and what it really does to us and the impacts it really has. Most of us are woefully uneducated about the truth behind alcohol, because we've had this drinking culture, largely fueled by the alcohol industry, shoved down our throats for decades. And just like it played out with smoking, right? People didn't know how bad it was. We've been operating under the assumption that a glass of red wine a day is good for our hearts, right? Well, now we know that that's BS, and all of that has been disproven. And the science now largely shows that no alcohol is safe or healthy. But people aren't really ready to hear that yet. But I encourage you to educate yourself, grab a book, listen to a podcast. There's tons of them out there that represent sort of all the areas on that spectrum I talked about. So you don't have to read a rock bottom story if that doesn't. If you don't relate to that at all, but grab a book, listen to a podcast. There's a Huberman Lab podcast that talks about alcohol. That's one of the most widely shared podcast episodes out there. That's great because it's really good education about the science behind alcohol and what it does to our bodies and brains. And it's always really eye-opening for people. So I always suggest that as a first step, and then find somebody to talk to. Tell somebody what you're thinking. Dig into the alcohol-free community on places like Instagram and TikTok. It's incredibly supportive and uplifting, and you can get so much information there. There's also lots of great apps out there that will help you kind of track how much you're drinking, figure out if you want to scale back, whether your goal is total abstinence or not. There's a lot of tools out there. We used to think the only way to stop drinking is if you're an alcoholic and you go to AA. And that's just not true anymore.
Great that there's so many resources.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, what an interesting conversation, a very helpful conversation with Hadley Sorensen. And we talked about, some of the perils, if you will, of social drinking, where sometimes we don't realize that we're doing something every day, and maybe it's something we need not do every day, and things can get out of hand. And our culture, a lot of it, again, is built around drinking. Now, the good news is a lot of if you don't have a real big issue and you just want to stop or roll back. It's you learn if you're circumspect, you can learn, as Hadley did and I did, that a lot of it is about the ritual. And if you can learn about yourself and learn about your behavior and have some type of self-discipline before it gets out of hand, where you really need help, then you can do a lot on your own to overcome any challenges you might have in terms of managing your alcohol intake. And also learning that the ritual is so important, where I know I learned that, hey, I could have a non-alcoholic beer. And usually I just want one, and sometimes I don't even drink the whole thing, but it's just the fact that I have a cold beer in front of me, and it does the trick for me. I'm not advocating that. And Hadley nor I were advocating anything in this episode except for you to be self-aware. Ask yourself, how does alcohol affect me? Am I a somebody who needs to have alcohol every day? Do I need to talk to people? Do I need a support group? Do I need help? We're not doctors, we're not psychologists or psychiatrists. We're just saying this, we're regular people, and this is part of our culture, where there's so many activities that are based around alcohol. Again, you go out after work, you meet with your friends, you get together for a glass of wine, for a beer, to watch a game, whatever it is. There's so many. You celebrate an anniversary, you celebrate a graduation, you celebrate going on a trip, whatever it is. There's so many reasons to celebrate sometimes that we use alcohol as the lubricant that moves our culture along. And we have to be mindful of it and really do our very best to just be aware of our own behavior. And if you do have any type of trouble or challenges with it, you have to talk to people, you have to seek help. We're not telling you what to do, but of course, it's always important to have a sounding board and have a support group out there to help you if you think that you're challenged with, you can't deal with social drinking. And it happens for a lot of people. So just be aware and know that there are support groups out there for you, and there is help for you if you seek it. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Guys Guys Radio on UK Health Radio. We're back next week with another great show. And until then, like I always say, guys, finish first.